Welcome to Create Destroy. Anna Luno with you. Today we are talking about how to create something that lasts. How do we navigate the intersection of creativity and business? And who better to talk on this than A-Track, who is currently celebrating 15 years of Fool's Gold Records this year. He comes in hot today with three must-hear tips for starting a brand and keeping it going. So before we get into it, smack that subscribe and let's dive in. This is Create Destroy, episode 4 of season 2 with A-Track. My guest today is Alan Maklovich, known worldwide as A-Track, DJ, turntablist champ, label owner, and all-around heart and soul of the dance community. His history is so rich, a lot of it is well known, but I'm not going to miss the opportunity to big up him on his accolades. So we're going to include his entry into the DJ community as a teen sensation, turntablist, multiple DMC champion. He was Kanye's first tour DJ, creator of the Goldie Awards, podcaster, president of the label Fool's Gold Records, having released quality music and his own shopfront in Brooklyn, curated block parties, events that have been a kind of backbone of the dance crossover hip hop space, with the community building, culture, and of course, music at its heart. Fool's Gold is also one of the first labels that I released on and celebrates its 15-year birthday this year. Whoop, 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 whoop. He is also one half of Duck Sauce with Armand Van Helden. He's created many world-famous songs across the dance and hip-hop genres. And yes, he made that Heads Will Roll remix that's popularity on a dance floor with Outlive Us All. Welcome, A-Track.
Thank you so much.
It's so great to have you here.
I'm happy to connect with the time zones and everything. The jigsaw puzzle of the time zones.
I just read your bio. Time zones are no match for you.
You know what? It never gets simpler. It's like when people are like, oh, you're probably not jet lagged. You're used to it. You never get used to it. But we figure it
that
out.
That is true. We do. We do it anyway, don't we? All right. So the bio really only scratched the surface for the record, but for as long as I've known you, since about 2008 or so, you've proven to be the type of person who's always juggling multiple projects, staying inspired, staying busy. I think you know what keeps you motivated. I think you are aware of the things that bring you joy about music and you seek them out and continuously refill your cup. And you're always growing and expanding, trying new things. You know, watching your career over the years, I feel like there's always growth. So in that vein, I want to ask you, what's on your plate right now?
Okay, right now on my plate, well, through the whole year, there's the Fool's Gold anniversary, which, you know, I would say what that involves in terms of, you know, the pieces to that puzzle, there's events throughout the year, and I do the bulk of the, I pretty much handle organizing the events at Fool's Gold, from, you know, finding venues with my agent to then, you know, getting a budget from the venue and booking the talent myself. So events through the year, a lot of them in New York, but adding stuff in other cities too. You know, planning a couple collaborations with other brands, especially people we're friends with. Some sort of anniversary vinyl, limited edition vinyl pressing that is probably going to come later in the year. Maybe some merch reissues. So that's Fool's Gold anniversary. In addition to steady stream of new releases, a lot of stuff I'm excited about on the label. And a couple of, like, you know, business and legal things that are less sexy, but that we, you know, always need to be sorted out with having an independent company. At the same time as that, you know, my own music projects, you know, there's an album that Chromeo and myself, so Dave and P and myself, did with a really wonderful artist from Chicago called Rick Wilson that came out about a month ago. The album's called Cluster
Funk. I love that project. So
sick. Thanks so much. Thanks. That's something that started during the pandemic, and I'm happy it's out. Armand and I have been making some new Duck Sauce songs, and it's kind of like a new batch, so it's more than just releasing those songs. It's kind of a whole new strategy of, like, when do we want to put them out? Which one has a video? What's the art going to be like? The video, yeah, all that stuff. So Duck Sauce, I've been working on one or two new EPs on the SB 1200 machine that I've been working on in the last year or two. So last year I put out 10 seconds, volume 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. I have volume 3 practically done, but I think I have enough for volume 4 also. So working on that, a couple collab tracks with other DJs, which kind of like we all do. One or two other like collaborative albums or projects with rapper friends and producer friends. So that's like the music plate. And then there's like DJ practice, DJ routines, and I don't know.
Yeah. I've got a headache. Hold on. I just kept
that's
a
what's
tally.
On my plate currently.
I just kept a tally, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, at least 9 projects that you just managed. That that actually has my head spinning. So when did you start planning this year? How do you plan out your year to get all that in?
Well, I work slowly, especially with recorded music. So like there's a lot of stuff that has been in the works for a year or two already. And certain things sort of come to fruition, you know? So I kind of constantly have many musical projects in motion, and a lot of them are collaborations with other artists. So I'm not always even like fully in control of when, you know, something.
Right. So
like I might be waiting on someone else.
Yeah, so no deadlines, you know, there. Just like when it happens, it happens.
Yeah, and when something feels like it's close to being done, then I get with the team and we start, you know, planning, you know, a target date for the release. But yeah, that I would say in general, I have many musical projects. And when something's close to done, then we're like, okay, it feels like we can set a deadline. Mm. And so that means it will come out on that month and da-da-da. So, I'm, you know, definitely in the beginning of the year, I'll look at kind of what's on my plate and what feels like it could be done, you know, that same year, what feels like it's more unpredictable, you know, set a couple targets, same way that we'll sit and do a release schedule for Fool's Gold or whatever else. But it's just always, always evolving.
And do you have, with Fool's Gold, this is obviously, we're going to go into the nuts and bolts of Fool's Gold later on, but...
Sure.
Just a quick overview. So planning out all these events, when did you start planning out this, what was going to look like this year? Do you have like a November, December, the year before summit where you guys all get together?
Yeah, it's funny because like I think there's something about last year being the first full year after the pandemic. It felt like such an effort just to get to the end of the year. Mm. And I noticed... similar thing to what I'm about to say. I noticed this even happening with some of my own booking and touring. Things that used to get planned around November and December for the upcoming year felt like they really got planned around January, February this year. Like,
okay.
You know, for instance, you know, typically like Europe touring gets booked way in advance. So like my own, at least like the tentpole kind of bigger festival plays or like, the marquee shows that other stuff gets added around of, usually by December or so we'll have a sense of like what's the, you know, strategic plays that are about to come up in the upcoming year. I remember starting January this year looking at, you know, having a meeting with Teamwork, with the management, and we were just sort of like, got a wide open year. Some things will come in, but like it just felt like a lot of stuff wasn't planned as much in advance. But even that was part of why I leaned into the Fool's Gold anniversary so much, because I felt like the landscape of touring is kind of being redrawn this year. I ended up changing agents for a couple territories too, a new agent in Australia actually, and a couple other things. And as everything was sort of being redrawn, and as I really felt like at the start of the year, people were just sort of reeling in from a complicated year last year, I sort of looked at it like, you know what, let me just build a lot of my own stuff with Fool's Gold.
Smart.
Anniversary.
Control where you can know, have and, it.
Yeah, it gives me a chance to like, I get to put a narrative on it and be like, we're celebrating the anniversary. We're going to do a residency at Public Records in New York. We're going to do parties during Fashion Week. There's going to be a sort of indie sleaze party in June. And then we decided to do that at Webster Hall. And I always do A-Track and Friends in Miami at Oasis, so we did that in March. I'm just now figuring out some sort of LA play, and then it's like, you know, just sprinkling a couple of things around that, but, you know, it gave me a chance to sort of draw the map myself.
There's an ongoing theme of consistency. You know where you are at certain times of the year and where you have been, and you hit those marks throughout the year. Give your life structure.
Yeah. It's, you know, even all that is kind of nuanced because, you know, staying home during the pandemic, getting a chance to spend more time experimenting on DJ routines and trying out new equipment and drum machines and things like that, I got a glimpse of something I hadn't had in a very long time, which was just having the freedom of time to, you know, mess around and experiment with DJing and new types of production without the constraints of touring. And it made me feel like for years and years and years, my touring calendar governed my whole life. And I would squeeze in recording time in the gaps and holes between the touring times, which is the way that I think a lot of us DJ/producers organize our time. And even like family time, personal time, when do I see my parents, all that kind of stuff. It was just like, well, my touring calendar says this, so let me just work around that. And reflecting on that during the pandemic made me want to, pull that back a little bit. There's an element to touring and bookings that, you know, where I can't fully be in control because we, for the most part, field offers. But I just wanted to, like, be less at the mercy of my touring and take on a few less things that come from the outside so that I could design how I use my time more.
Smart.
And now I'm trying to see that through. And it's, you know, of course I end up accepting more things than I set out to do, but, you know, I do feel like there's been a little bit of a new equilibrium in how I run my time.
Yeah. I mean, it's always a balance, that teetering line of like things coming in and having to say yes because they're great opportunities, saying yes to things 6 months before and then realizing at the time it's going to be a lot more pressure than you realized. There's all that's constantly fluctuating. I mean, your capacity is huge. I want to point out that this is a testament to the capacity that you can achieve when you master various skills and you have, you know, lots of groundwork there. Like playing a huge festival at one time of your career might have taken up 2 weeks of headspace and prep. Now you could probably put that together in 24 hours or less, you know? You know how to do that on tap.
Yeah, I have gotten to that place in recent years where, as much as DJing is still my primary source of income and, you know, the main thing that people know me as a DJ first and then whatever multi-hyphenate thing, but it all stems from DJing. But I don't need to spend all that much time on my DJing. You know, in the last month or two, I kind of chose to get back to practicing and coming up with new tricks with CDJs specifically because that felt exciting to me. Filming that stuff, putting it on my socials, but I don't have to as much. And everything else that I do, from production to now a couple of documentary projects and even, you know, possible business ventures or whatever, like that's what occupies my mind more. That's what I need to put more brain time and brain power on.
Right.
DJing, a lot of times I just show up because I spent so many years, sharpening those swords. And now I just
ninja
try to make sure, you know, yeah, make sure they're still kind of sharp here and there, and then it just show up.
The ninja era. All right, so we're going to jump into the toolkit stuff. I honestly could talk to you about it all day. I thought of like 5 questions to ask you then. I'm zipping it, and I'm moving into toolkit series. So our subject today is a great one that we have not focused on this so far in the podcast, but I believe that you're the man to speak to this. Sustaining a creative project that is built to last. You've had many projects over the years, as we've discussed, and I love how you commit with integrity, investing in the ideas, allowing them grace and space and time to form themselves, and how you flesh them out. You go storefront, you go merch lines, you do events, those things. I mean, it's hard to do those, and they take a few years sometimes to get right. A few years, you know, you learn all the lessons as you go. It's also solid and consistent, so let's dive in. I thought it might be fun to take us back to a time when the idea for creating Fool's Gold hatched.
Sure. So Fool's Gold, you know, was born kind of during the Christmas break from 2006 to 2007, like the very start of 2007, like by December 2006, the four original founders, myself, Nick Catchdubs, my brother Dave, and Dust LaRock, agreed that we would start a label, and we sort of bounced around some names of a label during that break, so that at the very top of 07, Fool's Gold was born, and we kind of hit the ground running. And I would say that it was really, you know, born in a climate and during a time when there was a ton of new music all around us. And, you know, working with Dust on, you know, even just like a new website for myself a year before and flyers for a few shows in New York. He was designing flyers for Roxy Cottontail that I was playing at and Nick was playing at. Like, there was an aesthetic that felt fresh and current and felt like ours. And then there was just music all around us. I was one of the producers on Kid Sister's, you know, first couple tracks of new music.
Pronails,
and Damn Girl and a few of those songs. And
I think that was my MySpace song for a while there.
Amazing. You know, her brother Josh was part of Flostradamus. Floss were, you know, throwing some parties and making really cool music. They played me Cool Kids, you know, and just kind of everyone around us, even just other New York DJ friends. Sammy Bananas was making really cool party records and bootlegs. And it just felt like there was enough in the circle to start a label and have a couple things to put out. And as soon as we put out those couple things, there's more things that came knocking. And, you know, within that first year and a half or so, we had Kid Cudi, we had, you know, Treasure Fingers, things like that. But, you know, right from the start, there was, there were a couple of decisions and, you know, things that had a very clear intention on our side. You know, Dust was going to create the artwork for everything. So there was a visual identity. In the brick, the Gold Bar logo was there right from the start. So, you know, a really recognizable logo identity and a style of artwork, something that looked like a Fool's Gold single, was established from the start. And the music that we were signing and putting out was, you know, club-based music, a sort of hybrid between up-tempo, you know, party-friendly rap and electro and house, but that also felt kind of hybrid. And it sounded new, you know? So there was a sonic identity. And within the first year, we started, you know, making logo merch and throwing our own parties. Even we did a full-blown North American tour on the first year. And on the second year, we did a European tour and another North American tour. So there was a lot of things that we put forth right from the start that I think defined an experience for what Fool's Gold is. There was, you know, a type of music, a visual identity, parties that encapsulated what that music is, but also, you know, what our audience even sort of looks like, dresses like, their age group, their demographic, all that stuff got crystallized pretty fast.
Did you formalize it? Did you write it out? Like a motto, you know, a manifesto of sorts, a design deck? Did it get very literal?
I would say that there was some verbiage, and, you know, of the four founders, you know, Dust was the visual artist. The remaining three, Nick maybe more officially, but myself and Dave too, were all kind of writers, or we all have experience writing. So there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of opportunities to, you know, describe what Fool's Gold is about, and, you know, press releases and little blurbs on the website and things like that. So we did formulate into words what we felt Fool's Gold stood for, who we were, what labels we were inspired by, and the scene that we were a part of, that we were keen on, you know, crystallizing or you know, capturing for the history books, hopefully.
So that, our first tool of the day.
Yeah, I would say really defining, you know, what the brand or the product is. If you're talking about a label, you know, what kind of music does that label put out? What's the emotion that's associated with it? Because I think when people...
Emotion.
Yeah, when people have an emotion... Yeah, I think when people have an emotional memory attached to something, whether it's, you know, even just a t-shirt or a cupcake or whatever, or a label or a series of parties, when the memories associated with that hit some sort of feeling, some sort of emotion, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, I mean, in our case, the parties did a lot for that. You know, memories that really stay ingrained with people, those stay for the longest, you know? And even just in terms of music, like, you don't have to put out the same type of record over and over again. But if on an overarching level, people think of your label as, well, this is the music I put on, you know, when I'm getting ready to go out, or when I'm out raging, or when I... you know, when I'm sad or whatever it is, like they feel a certain way and they turn to your group or your brand or your label when they feel that way, mm-hmm. that builds a really strong bond, you know? So yeah, I think our first tip was to really define what it is that you stand for. You know, I know we're talking about longevity, and I think there might be a tendency for people to skip that step and start thinking, oh, well, longevity, that means you have to adapt to the times and you have to change. And it's like, before you think about any of that, what are you doing exactly? What is it? Why do people come to you? You know, I tell this a similar advice even to new DJs. You know, I tell people, like, make sure you clearly define what your style is. Your style could be a mix of 3-4 genres, but there's a mood, or there's an energy, or there's something that is you, and that you want people to come to you for that thing. Well, what is that thing? And the more you hash it out and you type it out into a paragraph, or you know, match that feeling or that sound with a visual, and you come up with something that's concise that people get, and you create memories with people that really stay, you know, with them, then you can start thinking about what happens over time, you know? But defining what that thing is really the most important thing for any brand or label or anything.
Great tip. So we've established a brand, and this leads us to your second point, which is how you then adapt over time.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a bit of a nuance in how I wanted to formulate or communicate this second tip about how to navigate changes over time, which kind of harkens back to the first point. In other words, you're gonna have to evolve with time, but how are you gonna do that without changing what you stand for? You know, because I think, look, we've all seen like a bad rebrand. We've all seen like a Carl's Jr. logo or a Gap logo that gets introduced, when you see it and you're like, no, what were they thinking? Yeah. You're like, what's that? You know, it's and you got to be stubborn to survive the times, because the forces, the powers that be around you, make you feel like you have to change.
Wow, stubborn. You have to be stubborn.
You have to be stubborn to be an artist, you know, for so many reasons. I could speak for an hour about just
stubbornness.
The force of being stubborn. Yeah. I'm an Aries. But yeah, like as a brand or a product or something in the category that we're talking about, you know, of course you have to evolve. Like let's say email marketing first gets introduced. Well, you don't want to, you know, miss that boat. Or like, you know, so certain technology changes. I mean, look, when Fool's Gold started, we had our music on iMeme. Of course, that doesn't exist anymore. You know, let alone the fact that streaming platforms didn't exist. We went from the iTunes download store to the Wild West for a couple of years to now the DSPs. So there's tools that you have to adopt. Adapt and adopt. Yeah, both. But if you want to really survive the longer haul, there's, you know, even just to give examples of a label or a clothing brand, there are permanent items or permanent things or even permanent like feelings and emotions that your brand represents that need to stay consistent because that's what the brand stands for, you know? So Supreme can make all types of things. Supreme can sell literally a brick and a motorcycle and puffer jackets of all kinds, but you're always going to be able to get the box logo Supreme t-shirt. And through generations and generations, that's the core, you know? Ray-Ban sunglasses can introduce all kinds of things, but you know, that classic Ray-Ban shape and the aviators, there's like two or three shapes that you, when you see that through the ages, you're like, that's a Ray-Ban. And, you know, you might be looking through mood board photos from other eras and something from the 70s and someone's wearing those Ray-Ban aviators in the 70s. And you might be like, you know what, I want to bring those back and you can still buy those now. Like that is such a strong brand identity. And, you know, musically, that reflects too. And it can be a little bit more abstract. It's like you got certain labels that are the home of rebellious music through the times, you know, and that changes, you know, what rebellious music sounds like in 1993 and in 2012 or whatever. Sonically it's going to be different, but there's a through line, and there's a type of teenager that's going to like that music totally. No matter the time. And, you know, experimental music, Fool's Gold was really inspired by labels like Stone's Throw and Raucous and Warp and Mowax, and like, you know, labels where you feel like as a fan you can own everything they put out and you know it's going to be quality. But like, to use Warp as an example, they're an experimental, usually somewhat electronic, but just experimental music label. You know, at one point in time, that's Flylo. At one point in time, that's Aphex Twin. If you get lost in the details, those might seem like different types of music, but it stands for the same thing, right? So to sort of rein that in and get back to the original point, you know, your label or your brand or whatever it is that you're building needs to stand for something that stays consistent through time. So part of your challenge as you navigate, you know, the changes of time and longevity is, sure, certain things have to change, but there's a, what's the new version of that thing that you stand for? Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Maybe. And sometimes there's specific, you know, items. I mean, I used the example of a Supreme t-shirt earlier, or a certain sunglass. Like, there's items that can literally stay permanent. You know, like, I love the idea of a permanent collection. With Fool's Gold merch, there's a couple of permanent items that we always keep in print. And then there's rotations and new stuff. But sometimes it's even more abstract, but it's more a consistent connection with a type of demographic that's always going to exist through time.
For our Gen Z audience, I think we're talking about core memory. I think that would be the term.
Right. Right. And you know, I think the Gen Z audience is constantly pulling, you know, references and mood boards from other eras. And I'm sure they get excited to see, you know, what was the, you know, 1978 equivalent of their group of friends. Oh, in those years, they were listening to this band. They were going to CBGBs, and they were doing this, and they were that, doing that. And, you know, they'll find, like, their current version of that same spirit and, you know, maybe wink at the earlier inspiration by wearing a similar T-shirt or boot or whatever, but listening to the new version of that music. And you know, I think once you realize that, like, there are through lines through the generations and through, you know, then you can really have fun with it.
I tweeted this recently, which was like, one of my favorite things about music is watching spirits, like similar spirits, find each other throughout the generations. Yeah. So you see Todd Edwards making a track with Interplanetary Criminal or whoever it was that he posted the other week, and new garage producer who's like 20 something years old in their early 20s, and they've found kinship, and the ages are relevant because they're the same type of creator that have found each other two generations apart. I love that. So we've now got two great points. We've got your first point, which is focusing on carving a super strong identity before you get started. We've got our second point, which is about adapting. So adapt with the times, but stay with your core message.
Yeah. Yeah. Your core message and yeah, keep a consistency with what you stand for.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. So what's our third tool?
The third tool is the least sexy, but it's important, and it's just stay on top of your business. You know, if we're talking about, especially if we're talking about a brand or a label or just some sort of, I mean, I think we're generally talking about independent businesses here. You know, all of us have to have admin day, you know, and
can't skip it.
Read those contracts, understand your contracts. It's not that hard. It's just lingo, but understanding why certain things in a business deal are designed the way that they are. And what's, you know, even just talking about record labels, you got royalty deals and you got, you know, profit sharing deals. Why, what's the rationale behind both? What kind of company lends itself more to one or the other? What are the risks for one model over another? It's all based on ideas and on priorities, you know, and you got to understand that and see if it matches your type of business, you know, the same way that, I don't know, if you're making clothing, do you front the manufacturing costs or do you do a licensing deal with some sort of bigger conglomerate that funds everything and you just get a royalty of that? There's pros and cons to all that, but there's reasons. And, you know, you're probably going to have a business manager at some point down the path of having your business, or an accountant. You know, you want to sit with them probably quarterly, see how the numbers are going. And just trying to get a sense. I mean, when I say stay on top of your business, that maybe there's the finances and there's the paperwork, and both are equally important. You know, on the financial side, for any kind of label or brand or this kind of business, like, there's usually something that drives it. You know, we all add a whole bunch of bells and whistles to what we do. Like, sure, you might want to like make stickers and put out an album that doesn't sell, but it's just really cool. Da da da. There's all these things that we do that don't really move the needle financially, but there should be one thing that like is the engine of your business and consistently keeps the money flowing so that you can, you know, then have fun with these other exercises. You know, so understanding how that runs, you know, and how you can rely on it. And on a paperwork level, just making sure that the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, because things will creep back up a couple of years later. There's going to be some sort of disagreement. Someone will come and knock on the door in 7 years and be like, hey, you know, was I paid for this or that thing, or who actually owns the IP, the whether it's the songwriting or the design or whatever, on that thing that happened 6 years ago, you know, when you had another brand manager, another GM, you know, if the paperwork is done, you can just look it up and be like, boom, you know. But when it's not, when you skip those, you know, little admin days, and next thing you know, time flies. I mean, look, none of us have time to do everything we want to do. We're all playing catch up constantly. But, you know, I've definitely suffered, or Fool's Gold has, or, you know, a few of my projects have suffered over time for like a couple things slipping or not being tidy enough. And the cleanup work, when it's done later, is not fun, you know? So, or even like if you're starting a brand or a company or a label, something with a few friends, you need a shareholder agreement or some sort of partnership agreement. You know, in the beginning, it's all fun because it's just exciting. Oh, we're starting a thing. We're building a thing. What happens when one of the people in that collective has a change of heart 2-3 years later, or claims that they came up with the logo or the this or the that, or feel like they got ripped off over XYZ. You know, you need to put things on paper.
Yeah, I mean, huge, huge tip right there. How much do you, as the creative director, which is, I assume, your role, at, are you like the creative director, would you consider yourself?
At Fool's Gold?
Yeah.
No. No, creative, I mean, actually, my two other partners probably wear that hat more than me. Both Nick and Dave, over time, have done, because to me, creative direction is really like on the visual side. I'm president of Fool's Gold.
President.
Yeah.
As president, how much do you educate yourself to the paperwork and to all the little parts of the business, to the legal side? Is that something that you're happy to delegate, or you're really trying to get across everything properly?
No, I've had to learn how all that stuff works over the years. You know, and early on, you hire a lawyer, you know, and you sort of trust them to take care of a couple things. I had a big like aha moment in life where I realized that like there's no such thing as there's no profession where like everyone is truly on point. Like I think we're raised to think that like doctors are super knowledgeable and lawyers are super knowledgeable and they're like these elevated professions. I've dealt with plenty of lawyers who have made, literally yesterday I caught a mistake, like something that was completely forgotten from a contract from a lawyer. Not our lawyer, actually, just if ever my guys
in case you're
this.
Listening.
But I've had plenty of lawyers, you know, make sloppy markups and you know, really jeopardize a business position. Just like I've had plenty of like doctor experiences at this point in my life too, where I've, you know, after years of talking to one person, you realize, how did they miss this whole thing?
Right.
So, you know, I think it's important to at least, I'm not saying that I'm a lawyer or that I would draft a deal myself, but I need to at least like understand what's being written, be able to read it. There's also this idea, I think, with Fool's Gold that like everything that we present to our artists, we want to feel comfortable with, you know, if it was presented to us,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, you know, ever since the start, we've wanted to have deals that like we can read ourselves and understand ourselves. Mm-hmm. So there's an element of that too.
Yeah, a transparency of sorts. It's a really good one.
Yep. Yeah.
I love that. I wanted to ask you, so there's three really major tips there: focusing on a strong brand identity, adapting with the times while maintaining core message, and staying on top of your business. Now, I wanted to ask you, you touched on it a little earlier, what makes something a success in your eyes?
I do think that success is very relative. I think success has to do with two things. One is some type of sustainability, you know, like something that's viable, sustainable, you know, in the sense that like we might think that a top five artist on the, you know, radio charts is successful, but they might not be able to put up, you know, an arena show. You know, people know their song, but they don't know them. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, you got bands that sell 30,000 albums, but they can sell 2,500 tickets in any city in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think that band is more successful, mm-hmm. you know? So, because there's something sustainable. So that's one element. And I think the other element of success is some sense of satisfaction, pride, joy. Like, I associate success with a feeling of like, ah, great. Like that worked, you know, like if I didn't include that element in the definition, it would be missing a little something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Sustainability and satisfaction. Look, this is a question I ask all the guests to wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, in what ways are you trying to improve right now? And you can answer that personally and also as from the perspective of the label as well, seeing as that's where we're at today.
Sure. I think I'll answer it even more personally. I'm happy to go that route. I mean, to me, like self, you know, improvement, self-work, all that's never over. You know, it's like a life mission. You know, there's, and I guess what I'm going to say is probably easier to understand if I point out that, like, my career started when I was quite young, and I dove with a pretty narrow focus into a very intense level of work when I was very young. And I think in a lot of ways there was like a life balance that wasn't there. And there was like a certain, almost like a solitude mission, like just going to a bunch of hotel rooms and cities by myself and scratching, you know, like for years and years and years, that I've spent a lot of time since trying to, you know, balance back out. So, you know, things that I try to improve in my life now are making sure that I'm present for my friends and my loved ones. You know, I hate the, like, well, Alan's busy excuse. I don't like being treated differently because I'm a DJ or a label guy or whatever. So trying to be present and, you know, to feel like my people I care about can count on me. The elusive life balance is probably an ongoing mission for my whole life. Like, what does that even mean? I'm not sure. And you know, I don't even have to ever get to a point where I truly get, like, maybe it's a thing that you never fully reach in this kind of profession, but at least to sort of interrogate myself and make sure that I'm not just like outputting constantly, but that there's things that are enriching and there's experiences that I can share with people I care about, where it's not just like hustle mode all the time, because I'm wired to only go into hustle mode.
And when you're world champ at 15, I mean, you know, you've already ticked such huge boxes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, that being said, like, I also am okay with living, you know, a sort of regimented life. I think the life of an artist includes a certain amount of sacrifice. And I don't have, you know, I probably don't have the same, when I talk about life balance, I'm not trying to just like get a house in the suburbs with a picket fence and read my newspaper and my slippers, you know, every Sunday. But it's just breaking certain habits that were put in place in the earlier years as a sort of like, maybe back then it was like survival instincts. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where I've wanted to revisit that and be like, okay, how crazily did I rewire myself? And are there a couple things that I can, maybe this wire needs to go there instead of here. Like, at least like understanding what the hell I did to myself when I was a teenager.
I mean, yeah, it comes at a price for sure. And and it's incredible the amount of focus that you're able to put on something and how quickly you realized your purpose and your mission. You were on a mission from such a young age, and it's so healthy that you're looking to the sides and looking at and questioning all of that. And I've watched you do it. Remember during the pandemic when you became a chef and you started cooking?
I haven't cooked in a while, but that was fun. I was happy to share my hummus and my salads with you.
Yeah, the pleasure was all mine. Well, thank you so much for these incredible answers and for all your honesty, talking about what you've learned in this incredible career and how you continue to grow. And
thanks.
We love watching what you do, and you bring so much to the universe that we revolve in. So thank you for everything you do, and thank you for being here today and sharing all these beautiful tips.
Thank you. Thanks for pulling these tips out of, you know, your friends and me and all the other awesome people you've had on the show. It's a great service. Yeah, thank you. Cool. Woo! Talk soon.
Thank you, A-Track, and happy birthday to Fool's Gold Records. It's hard to imagine the last 15 years without the presence and amazing events and music of the Fool's Gold brand. Make sure you check out the parties they've lined up in New York and beyond. Get along to one if you can, and no doubt, if you can't, there's some limited edition Fool's Gold merch or vinyl online. Now, if you have a friend who is trying to start something, then do them a favor and send them this podcast. Share the knowledge, help each other, subscribe to this podcast, and stay locked for more essential creative insider lane knowledge. If you haven't already, check out the Ask Anna Top 5 Question Booster episode I dropped 2 weeks ago. Also, Nick Sylvester talking creative recovery and DJ Seinfeld talking production on the move. That is just this season. There's also 8 episodes from the former season as well. Lots to dig into. Thank you for listening. And until we meet again, do not forget to stay on the side of creation.